This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 19th at 10:19 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like Mike DeWine might actually have something nice to say about Mary Taylor. Okay, time for politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly look at Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. And joining us this week, Ann Fisher of All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Fresh off Pledge Week, right in the midst of the Blue Jackets playoff run. Ann, what a week.
I'm all a tingle.
That's right.
This week, between Pledge and the Jackets, it doesn't get any
You can actually
than that.
Stay up and watch the games, though. I have to go to bed. I have to go to bed when they start, pretty much.
I know, and I did watch the game on the double overtime game this week.
Oh, the bad one,
yeah. I did fall asleep at spots, but I stayed up to see the end. It's been a great series so far.
Yeah, three overtime games. I don't know how often. I'm not a huge hockey fan, but that doesn't happen very often,
Not very often at all. It's very, very difficult, and it's exciting tonight, you know.
Things may have changed by the time
may have changed
this.
By the time people hear this. They could be
up 3-1 or tied 2-2.
Yeah, or maybe even up by 4, maybe by
That's
the time
right.
you
They could have won the
up.
Series by the time people hear this podcast.
Oh, man, it's pretty exciting.
Can
it's good news.
That?
It's really, really great to see.
All right, enough hockey. Back to politics.
No, never enough.
This week, the political dust-up involves Dennis Kucinich, the Democrat running for governor, and his sympathies for Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad.
That's right. Kucinich met with Assad last year. He has questioned whether Assad actually used chemical weapons on his own people, and he has been critical of U.S. military involvement in Syria's civil war, calling it a war crime.
Now it comes out that a group that supports Assad's government and is critical of the U.S. government's policy on Syria paid Dennis Kucinich $20,000 to give a speech at a gathering in London, England last year.
And it gets even messier than that. The AP reported Kucinich did not fully disclose who paid for the trip on his ethics commission's forms. Kucinich later corrected the filing. His opponents, including Richard Cordray's supporter Ted Strickland, say Kucinich was trying to hide the payment and his sympathy for Assad.
Dennis Kucinich has been an outspoken defender of the Assad regime in Syria, even as it killed countless people and has repeatedly used chemical weapons against defenseless civilians.
Mike, that's a pretty close tie he's making there with Assad. I certainly don't think Kucinich supports the gassing of Syrian people, but he is making a strong case against what Kucinich did.
Yeah, I mean, Dennis Kucinich maintains that his efforts reaching out to Assad and going to Syria and speaking at this conference in London is to bring peace to Syria. He opposes U.S. military involvement. In fact, he opposed the missile strike of the recent days. But Richard Cordray is looking for something to use against Dennis Kucinich because of the gun issue that Dennis Kucinich has over Richard Cordray in the Democratic primary. Cordray needs something to soften that blow.
I think this is fair game on a couple levels, one being that it is unclear why it wasn't fully disclosed in the first place. So you automatically, to me, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, he said it was a California civil rights group that paid him.
And by the way, that group not only wants peace in Syria, who doesn't want peace in Syria, who argues against that, but that group also is questions the authenticity of the 9/11 in New York City. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of other sketchy things about this group besides that. And when you take money from a group like that, you're telling people that you align yourself on some level with that group. So, the fact for me, it's the hiding of it, the not fully disclosing of it that doesn't pass the smell test. So,
and I was surprised at Dennis Kucinich's response. It's pretty boilerplate in that he says, you know, this is political smear campaign. But in the response, he talks about Cordray and his ties to the NRA. In his response to these allegations about this Syrian group, and he's not giving up on them. I mean, that's his main play. It's his only play at this point. It seems like
it really is. That's the issue that you know, because of the, it's been 2 months now since the shooting in Florida, in Parkland, Florida, but that has galvanized those folks on the far left. They want their candidates to take a tougher position on gun control. They want them to call for a ban on assault-style weapons. And Richard Cordray is not willing to go that far. Mm-hmm. And he has had the endorsement of the NRA in the past, and Dennis Kucinich is trying to hang that around his neck.
And it's not working to this point, I don't think. I think some polls I saw out of Cleveland had Cordray at 27%. Kucinich was about half that.
The key there, though, is among Democrats. Could Kucinich attract people from, other people who haven't voted before, people with voted Republican last time, people who voted for Trump? It just depends. I mean, he does attract a different ilk.
Yeah, he is going after the Trump voter, ironically.
Right. He has called himself the outside candidate.
Yeah.
Right.
But
Not that he is, but that's what he calls himself.
Voters for outside candidates tend not to vote in primaries. They vote mainly in presidential elections. They tend not to vote in midterm elections, and they certainly don't regularly vote in midterm primaries. So
right, but I think everything's sort of different now.
It is different.
I think people are becoming a lot more attuned to how the system works and are getting it that when you vote in a primary, you're making some big choices that you can't make at the general level.
Getting to this idea, are people aware of this? I mean, do you think this is registering with the average voter?
I don't know. Primary voters are among the most educated voters.
So with primary voters, you suspect
they are probably paying attention.
And I think Syria is in the news now. If this happened, I'm not sure when it would happen, when Syria wouldn't be in the news. It's been in the news for the last 3 or 4 years heavily. But
with the chemical suspected use of chemical weapons and the missile strike, it's very timely. In a bit of a surprise, the Cleveland Plain Dealer this week endorsed Dennis Kucinich for governor over the establishment's favorite, Richard Cordray. Mm-hmm. The editorial board said Dennis Kucinich is the only Democrat who can shake up the state house and bring meaningful change to Ohio government. And is this just the PD endorsing their hometown guy?
Well, that's kind of lame. I mean, to do that. That's just super lame and not good journalistic practice at all. So if it is, then that's just bad. They said, you know, they made reference to, he did have this relationship with, you know, the
Assad,
whole Assad thing, but he just can't ever do that again. Well, that tells people something important about him now. And to say that he'll never do it again, if nothing else, Dennis Kucinich is known for flying by the seat of his pants. And, you know, I don't see how saying that is going to guarantee a thing.
If Kucinich is the outside candidate and he could attract the quote unquote Trump voter, whoever is elected governor is almost certainly going to enter a GOP-controlled House and Senate. Still, they're going to have to work with the GOP legislature. There might be some truth to he is the only person who can shake up the state house. As far as a Democrat in this race, I mean, Richard Cordray, he's not getting the Republican votes. He's not bringing Republicans to the table, really, I don't think.
Well, except for his guns stand.
Yeah. But the Plain Dealer's point was, the editorial's point was, that basically Ohio is treading water at best. And the state house has been stuck in this malaise. They went back as far as Governor Taft. Governor Taft, then Governor Strickland, then Governor Kasich. You know, the job growth has been sluggish. We had the Great Recession. We recovered from that. So, and then education is still a problem. Opioid crisis is still a problem. And the Plain Dealer is saying that Dennis Kucinich, because he's a maverick, is the guy who can change this is how the state government works.
Basically, if they want to change, there's only one thing that can stand in the way of the Ohio General Assembly as it stands now, very, very thoroughly Republican controlled, is over time a change to how we draw the district lines, of course, and also a candidate at the top, a Democrat or Republican in the governor's office that won't rubber stamp everything the General Assembly does. It's a very activist General Assembly. And, you know, I think Richard Cordray or Dennis Kucinich could be in a position to do that. But, you know, the Plain Dealer, one of the biggest faults of that whole editorial endorsing Dennis Kucinich is that they don't address his electability. Yeah. And I think that's the Achilles heel of the whole thing. I don't think he can get elected, you know, in a primary.
The line
might be wrong.
The line that struck me in the editorial was that if Cordray is passionate about leading Ohio or has a vision for its future, he hit it well during the endorsement interview. So it sounds like the Plain Dealer picked Kucinich over Cordray because Cordray bombed the interview, which is not the best way to pick a job candidate.
Has nothing to do with state government.
Well, I mean, there is a certain element to being a dynamic leader and inspiring people and things like that, which Richard Cordray lacks that charisma.
Rob Portman would disagree.
Yeah, but, you know, so should it really be based on the interview alone?
It sounded like personality played a really strong role in this, and no, of course not. That's what I mean. I mean, it's not good editorial policy.
There is a petition out there to get the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com to rescind its endorsement because the endorsement came before this disclosure of the paid speech came out. Kinnison's paid speech.
But they already knew he had things going on with Assad.
But have you ever seen a newspaper rescind an editorial?
I tried to research that, and I don't think so.
I've heard candidates. I mean, Rob Portman rescinded his endorsement of Donald Trump in 2016, but I've never seen a newspaper rescind.
I don't know that either. It seems plausible, but I've never heard of it, certainly. Let's turn now to the GOP race for governor. From everything we hear and see, the race is not close. Still, Mike DeWine's campaign spending a lot of money attacking his opponent, Mary Taylor. One ad calls her a phony conservative.
Phony, not real. Fake, not truthful. Take career politician Mary Taylor. She claims she's conservative, but Taylor refused to endorse Donald Trump for president over Hillary Clinton.
Another ad claims her family made money off of state contracts.
Taylor's family business benefited from over $100 million in taxpayer-funded sources, and she wants it all hidden. Taylor opposes the state investigating some of the very government programs that made her rich. That's not conservative. Mary Taylor, taxing, taking, and two-faced.
Ann Fisher, these are pretty boilerplate negative campaign ads. The Columbus Dispatch, in a fact check, called the claims dubious. What do you think about the ads? I mean, they're in line with what we've seen in the last couple weeks anyway.
I'd call them bologna stew, but I would call that a lot of ads. It's just a bunch of bologna. They're taking a bunch of random facts that have no relationship to each other and jamming them all into the same ad. The $100 million state spending, she, number one, had no control over any of that. And her husband and his construction or his development company might have gotten some money from, but it's nothing.
Certainly
that
not
she,
$100 million.
And then the thing that she wants to hide all of it, again, that's a different spending fund, and that comes from Jobs Ohio. And she does not want the state auditor to be able to look at the books of Jobs Ohio, but be that as it may, it's not something that she controls. It's just a bunch of, like I said, bologna stew, and people can take it for what it is. Yeah, it's classic boilerplate negative campaigning.
I've never had bologna stew.
You don't want it, but we get it, and we lap it up every 2 to 4 years on our airwaves.
I'm listing the names that Mike DeWine has called Mary Taylor.
Okay.
Phony, unfit, a slacker, two-faced. This cannot. I just don't understand why he's going so negative nasty.
He has so much money.
If he has a 30-point lead in the polls, why is he doing this?
What's he going to do with the money? I mean, I guess he could save it till November, but
I just think
he'll
backfire.
Need it in November.
I think it could backfire. I think, first of all, he's going to need some of Mary Taylor's supporters in November if he wins the primary.
Good luck.
Okay. Being this nasty is not going to endear him to the Donald Trump voter and the Mary Taylor supporter who he's going to need if this election is close. And it has to turn off moderate, independent women.
There's only one reason he's doing this, and that because their internal polling is showing that they need to do it, that they need to go negative, and they need to do it in a big way. Just that second ad alone is $1 million buy at this point. There's only one reason.
Do they need it to win, or do they need it to win big? Because if it's close, that makes him look weak as well.
I think they need. I can't imagine they're spending that kind of money in slinging that kind of baloney unless they need it to win. Needed to win big. That's just bad form. And you know he is going to need the $1 million come November. He's going to, if he wins, he's going to have a tough race ahead of him.
All right, moving on to state politics at the statehouse. With the shadow of an FBI inquiry looming over the statehouse, a bill to cap rates charged by payday lenders is moving forward in the legislature. A House committee approved the bill this week. The bill tries to close loopholes that have allowed lenders to get around that 2008 law that was supposed to cap interest rates at 28%. Of course, this comes days after the resignation of House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger. He left after the FBI started asking questions about his foreign travel, which came with lobbyists of the payday lending industry. Steve Brown, moved through committee. It was delayed from last week, but it still is moving perhaps more quickly than many thought it would, given the power of the payday lending industry.
I could not believe how quickly they moved on this, given the Speaker of the Ohio House resigned because of the FBI looking into his travel with lobbyists from this industry. It clears a House committee a week later with all but one vote. The only person voting against it was Bill Seitz, who is a known kind of troublemaker in the House. He votes against a lot of things. I couldn't believe how quickly it was approved.
And do they just want to get this issue behind them? If this is only a House committee, it still has to go through the House and the Senate, so it's a long way to go. It may never happen. This is sort of the preemptive strike against the group trying to put this on the ballot in the fall.
Right. So far, they say they're still going to put it on the ballot.
Yeah, they're keeping their, you know, they're keeping their powder dry.
They may want to get this off their plates as soon as possible, but the fact of the matter is there's an investigation going on, and it's possible that Cliff Rosenberger won't be the only person that's caught in the net of this investigation. So also, yeah, you're right. It's only gotten through a committee. Then it's got to go to the full House, and it still has to go to the Senate. There were amendments introduced to benefit the payday lender industry. Those were set aside, and someone actually in the House said maybe they can take those up in the Senate, which is just unheard of that they would say something like that, particularly if they still have the floor vote to go. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't look good. In fact, it looks almost worse that they've jumped on this so fast.
Well, it's kind of like they're caught in between, because if a bill that would restrict the payday lending industry does not move forward, then it looks like the lobbyists have influence over them, especially with this FBI probe. But if they move quickly, it looks like they are reacting to the bad news, and that's not a good look either. So,
yeah, this is a lose-lose situation, yeah, I think, for the Ohio General Assembly.
But that's why I think they want to get it off their plates as soon as possible, get it off their plate
before
in April,
summer break.
Where we're all complaining about the weather, and no one's paying attention to this, and but there still will be a few negative ads.
Among consumers, this is a pretty popular issue, right? I can't imagine
it overwhelmingly on the ballot.
I don't think there's any way it fails at the ballot in November.
No, and I think that's what, you know, lawmakers are worried about that.
They could still, doesn't matter what they pass, they could still go forward with whatever, you know, with a ballot issue if they're not satisfied with it.
The question is, does this bill close all those loopholes? Because nobody anticipated the loopholes they found after 2008. So
yeah, no guarantees.
A lot of money at stake. They will certainly find any loopholes that are there. Let's move now to our weekly segment, John Kasich, GPS.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Rockville, isn't this close to Bethesda?
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Our governor in Texas, speaking at a literacy conference sponsored by Barbara Bush's Literacy Foundation.
He's there with noted authors Jim Gaffigan, he's the comedian, action-adventure novelist Clive Cussler, and C.K. Curley, who writes about business. So apparently John Kasich will be speaking about who knows what, but he's the political writer in this bunch.
But nice timing for him. There's a lot of attention right now being focused on Barbara Bush.
Yeah, she passed away this week, and literacy was her cause. And it kind of crossed my mind whether they would go forward with this conference. But what better way to honor her legacy than to have this conference and bring attention to her cause?
Right. She had a lot of causes, actually. They weren't maybe some not as overt as a literacy one, but she was, the first lady who held a child with, you know, HIV, AIDS in her arms. This was right after the Reagan administration. This was right, you know, still when people were still very confused about whether you could touch somebody with AIDS and that kind of a thing. And she, she showed and emoted about that issue before anybody else did at that level. She's very important. I spent a couple days with her on the campaign trail in 1988, and she is interesting and is astute of an observer of human nature in person, as she seems to be, you know, through the public lens. I had a lot of fun talking with her and watching her at work.
Interesting.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. Be sure to tell your friends about us. And if you like the show, leave a good review on iTunes.
And you can listen to 89.7 NPR News using the WOSU Public Media mobile app and by asking your smart speaker to play WOSU. It works great. Until next week, I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown.